This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, folks, I think we are actually alive. At least I have heard the show begin and the music play. I'm on a guest line. I can see, though, that we have JB. You've signed in as they called in as the host, and we've got Kirk. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Should be.
I apologize for the, I guess it was a 16-minute delay trying to get this on, but I must have tried, 25 times between calling in on the host line and then using Direct Connect on two different computers, and completely struck out. Became very frustrating. So I don't know if it's a Blog Talk Radio problem or a Bahamas Cellular problem or an internet problem or an interface problem, but there is a big warning on the Blog Talk Radio page that they have issues and they have parts of their site that are down for maintenance. So we apologize. A lot going on with the world. This was a rough week. Anti-Semitism reared its ugly head again in Europe. An idiot, self-proclaimed idiot, by the way, Stephen Ballet, like all conspiracy advocates, sought to blame Jews for all of his own misery, and shot and killed two people in Germany. Earlier this week, a Muslim did not go reported, but he tried to bomb another synagogue, and had Stephen Ballet had his way, he was carrying enormous amounts of explosives. He wanted to break into the synagogue and murder hundreds of Jews. We also had a statement this week that was... I read it, you know, and I'm skeptical, and I read things on in the news. I'm just skeptical. And I read this and said, oh, come on. There is no way he said that. Not even he would say that. Sure enough, he said it. This is what he wrote in his own hand. If Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey. I've done before. Exclamation point. The U.S. has done far more than anyone could have expected, including the capture of 100% of the ISIS caliphate. In caps, the U.S. is great. I don't think I've ever seen anyone, other than maybe in a comedic routine where it's obviously just a joke, mm-hmm. say, in my great and unmatched wisdom. I don't recall any one of y'all.
You get a bigger ego.
You know, I'm just flabbergasted. How could anybody say, in my great and unmatched wisdom? I mean, this is the guy that's on the cusp of being impeached for lack of wisdom and judgment.
It sounds like a few of those Caesars back right before the army wiped them out, you know.
Oh, yeah, particularly when it's followed by, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey. Listen,
pardon?
Turkey did exactly what he said couldn't be done, which is that he started, Turkey started obliterating the Kurds. Listen, I've got no dog in this fight. The Kurds are, however, the largest ethnic group in the world without a homeland. They are actually what the Pakistanians claim to be. And Turkey is wants to treat the Kurds the same way they treated the Assyrians. They want to obliterate them. And they're doing so with American weapons. And so Turkey is bombing the Kurds in Syria. Now, that should be a real problem for an American, if you were the least bit patriotic, which I'm not, because the Kurds carried out essentially 90%, 95% of the American missions in Syria. They're the ones that that were able to defeat the Islamic State. Which makes the end of his quote even more ridiculous when he says that the U.S. has done far more than could ever have been expected. We didn't do anything. We proxied the Kurds. We armed the Kurds, and we made promises to them if they were to use our weapons to go after the Islamic State. They did so, and now we have abandoned them so that they can be slaughtered by American weapons wielded by Turkey. And then he says that we captured 100% of the Islamic State capital. Let me tell you, folks, you need, in your great and unmatched wisdom, you need to understand the concept of a capital. It's one dictator. So you can't capture 100% of one dictator. You either capture him or you don't capture him. And by the way, the United States didn't capture him. He was killed in a bombing that is likely the result of the Russians. But he wasn't captured by anybody. Isn't USA great? Now, the evangelical Christians are having their national convention, and Pat Robertson, the founder of the Christian Broadcasting Network, said after Trump announced the withdrawal of American troops from Syria, that he was in great danger of losing the mandate of heaven. These bozos are just, oh my, it's breathtaking. There was one bit of interesting news, good news, that did come out of the world of men this past week, and that is in Goshen, the area where scholars want to tell us that the Jews never were. There was no such thing as the Jewish captivity or exodus, and you know that whole thing was just a lark. Well, guess what they found in Joseph's home? They found Joseph's home, of course. Guess what they found in Joseph's home? His home. His
I'm
ring.
Not sure.
His ring.
Well, it's a seal.
Found his ring, you know. At the time, you know, the story that we're told is that, you know, Joseph's one of 12 sons, as we know, of Jacob. He was sold into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous of him. He was then falsely accused by an Egyptian lord's wife who falsely accused him of rape. Yeah, then in prison he met with some ministers who had also run afoul of Pharaoh. He deciphers their dreams, and then he's, because of his fame, he's introduced to Pharaoh, deciphers Pharaoh's dream of the lean and fat cows, predicting a time of plenty followed by a time of starvation. What he predicts is true, but Egypt is prepared for it. He's elevated to the status of vizier to the Pharaoh. And in that story, the Pharaoh is said to have taken off the ring of his own hand and placed it on Joseph. Now, Joseph could not wear Pharaoh's ring because Pharaoh's ring was essentially proclaiming that Pharaoh was the son of Ra. So he replaced it with one of his own. We found it. Isn't that amazing?
That's a wow.
Yeah. So there's, some good in the midst of man's mess. We're going to pick up our story of Mizmor 18, 46th state. It means Yahweh lives. So blessed and beneficial is my rock. Exalted, high above, is the God of my salvation. So those rock, indeed, Yahweh's foundation is the Temple Mount upon the ridge line of Zion, which is atop Moriah in the heart of Jerusalem. And our salvation, as well as those, was predicated on the enduring nature of what Yahweh did and what now David has written that took place in, here. And without the words to explain the deeds, there's no one that would have been able to capitalize on the work of Yah. And let's keep in mind, there is only one eyewitness account of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. You know, even of Pesach, what did the disciples do?
Ran away.
That's correct. So we don't have an eyewitness of Pesach in the Greek New Testament. Not one. But we do have an eyewitness account that was written 1,000 years before the events by Dode and Mizmor 22 and 88. I was having a discussion today at lunch as to whether or not Dode was taken there to witness those things and then, brought forward in time, if you will, to witness those things and then to report back to us so we would have an eyewitness account. Mm-hmm. And I said no. My lunch companion said yes. I don't think he was. Because, Mizmor 22, as we've noted, is written in first person. Dode was a feisty fellow. I think if Dode had been taken forward in time and had witnessed Yosha being whipped and crucified by the Romans, he would have been really hot under the tunic, man. He would have been feisty. His whole nature would have caused him to lash out. But he didn't. The whole thing is written in first person from Yosha's perspective or Yahweh's perspective. And so I think it's one of those times where the inspiration came by way of Yahweh telling Dode, I don't expect you to understand this. In fact, even if he was an eyewitness, which I don't think he was, there's no way that Dode would have understood the medical condition associated with crucifixion and the 22nd Mizmor and the 88th. Actually define what happens when a victim is crucified. He would not have known that as an eyewitness. So it's obvious to me that you'd have no way of understanding what I'm going to tell you, but it's really important that you write this down. And part of our discussion, it was just interesting to bring you into it, was that I made a statement that's really controversial, and I'm happy to be challenged on it. But I said, what really is the difference between being inspired to write words like we just read from Doug, and being inspired by the words that Dode was inspired to write? Is our inspiration any less direct? Is it any different? I think not. So I understand that if you're actually a Navi and the Yahweh is saying, this is what I want you to write, or he's inspiring you and allowing you to write it through your own personality, your own perspective, that, you know, there's a responsibility that goes along with that for precision and accuracy that we don't have. But in terms of inspiration, about what the words tell us, what we learn from them, who we get to know by them, is there really any difference than the set apart spirit or Yahweh himself speaking to Dode and him writing these words down and us reading the words that Dode wrote?
Aren't we both being inspired by the same words?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And exactly the same way, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the only difference...
We just have a little more leeway for being wrong.
Yeah, we have a leeway for being that wrong. We don't want to be wrong, but, you know, you don't have to kill us if we make a mistake. So, that part's good, you know. But... I'm glad we don't have to get a perfect score. But the only thing that I think is different, and even it is only marginally different, is Dode, for example, was taken to Shamaim in the seventh dimension. So was Yahshiyah. And when they were there, they reported what they saw. So what they experienced, and in the experience, was more vivid and richer than just the words that they've used to describe it. I'll grant you that. But, you know, I felt like when Yahshiyah was taken to heaven, and the first thing God did was open the door, and he witnessed that there wasn't a single person outside wanting to come in. And he broke down and blamed himself. I felt like I was there.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I think that the way it was described, I felt like I was there. I didn't feel like that Yahshiyah was given an opportunity to experience something that we're unable to experience.
Yeah.
So when I read the Torah and Moshe is speaking to us, I actually think we're in an advantage to those who actually were there listening to him, who had experienced it. Our background, our perspective is so much greater, and we have so much more to work with, and our language skills are so much better, and we can sit there and analyze every single word and the moods, the stems, the conjugations. So I really think that we have an advantage. Anyway, Dode wrote that Yahweh lives. He exists. He animates life. He's alive. He's growing. So blessed and beneficial is the rock, the threshing floor upon which the temple was built. Exalted and high above is the God of my salvation. I've been translating the Mizmors 8 and 9 over the last week. And there's some profound statements in 8 and 9, which I'll share in a moment about Yahweh's name. But Kirk, you sent me a note on 1846, which is the passage we just read. About the research you did, and it, I think what you wrote at the top, you know, it took about 20 minutes to figure this out.
Yeah, the heart of it, yeah, absolutely. It was. Well, I, you know, that was my hot button, like Asher was yours. And so I've always, and I'm in good stead because he talks about it enough, about people who love his name, and I really, truly do. I think it's fascinating to draw. I think it's fascinating to analyze, and after all, it is Yahweh. So, but what I was reading is I was reading translations on the lexicons. Shall I share it? Well, allow me. The NASB, which is the New American Standard Bible Lexicon, stated that in 3068, which is Strong's number, it's spelled in Hebrew, they got it right, is Yahweh. And then they go on to say it's pronounced Yahweh, which is poor, but as I said, it's close. And then they go on, the reason they do that is because it's due to the Shoah system of vowel pointing by the rabbinical types, and the word means, so I looked up the word, and the Shoah means emptiness, vanity, deceit, deception, false visions, lies, and worthlessness.
Imagine being a group of guys claiming to be exalted and to represent God to the community. And you come up with a system to vocalize the language that, by the way, already has five vowels amongst the 22 letters. And you call your system lies and deceit.
Exactly what they did.
At least they were honest.
Honest and being dishonest. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, at the top of my note to you, I said, you know, do what JB always says, look it up. So I looked it all up and I wrote down the numbers and to the words so anyone could look it up. And of course, with they pronounce it, they wrote down, they call it the Shav system, which is really interesting because as the Masoretes invented all this in the 10th century, they claimed the vowel pointing system was necessary because there are no vowels in Hebrew. But if you use the Shav system, there's no V in Hebrew either. So apparently none of them decided to read the Dabarim where Moshe said, don't change a letter, don't change a thing. So, but yeah, regardless, you know. And then oddly enough, I said that to you that I said that Moshe was able to read the whole Torah to about 2 million people. And he didn't have any vowels. And the dog wrote all the songs with no open mouth sounds, which I thought was quite amazing.
It must have been like a ventriloquist.
Yeah. So then I went on and found that the NASB, using the support of Strong's Concordance, went on to claim that Yahweh was the proper name and pronunciation of the God of Israel. Further, it is from its actual verbal root, which is Haya, and the number 1933, if you'd like to look it up. And although they pronounce it Hava, once again, they've inserted a V where there is no such thing as a V, in Hebrew, it just became, to me, rather comical. And just, I kept going, what is wrong with these people? Then they translated Yahweh into Lord. Yet Lord is male.
That is a replacement.
Yes, that is a replacement.
Where it comes from, translation means to replicate the meaning in a different language. Names, however, you don't replicate the meaning, you replicate the sound. That's called a transliteration. But when you replace Yahweh with Lord, that is not a translation nor a transliteration, but it's instead a replacement. Yeah.
And it takes Yahweh's name with Hasatan's title. That takes some cojones.
Yeah, and let me go ahead.
Sure.
Well, I was going to say that that as I was translating the eighth Mizmor Psalm, let me tell you what Dode has to say. Now, it's your call. It's your call. I mean, I don't want to prejudice anyone. You can determine whether or not the Shoah-based rabbinical system has a better grasp on Yahweh's name or Dode. It's your call. I don't want to prejudice your thinking here.
No influence.
But I'm going to read it as he wrote it. Yahweh, our Edom, our upright and strong pillar, how awesomely magnificent is your name in the entirety of the material realm, which to show the way to the benefits of the relationship you have chosen to gloriously bestow before and beyond the spiritual realm. He would go on to write, because he wasn't done singing the praises of Yahweh's name. He says, Yahweh, our Edom, upright and strong pillar, how awesomely magnificent is your name in the entirety of the material realm. He then begins the ninth Mizmor. I will rejoice and jubilantly express my admiration, celebrating with you. I want to sing to your godly name. This is pretty tough for the rabbinical types to refute, because they got to claim that they're smarter and know God better than Dode. So then, those who know your name trust and rely upon you, because you have not abandoned nor forsaken those who seek you, Yahweh. Let me read that again. So then, those who know, Yada, those who are made aware of, who recognize and respect, who become acquainted and familiar with after having been shown, who acknowledge and understand your name, Shem Atah, they trust and rely upon you, because you have not abandoned or forsaken those who seek you, Yahweh. You should want to sing to Yahweh, who establishes a dwelling place in Zion. Report among the people what he has done and is doing.
Wow.
You read that kind of thing, and you just have to ask the question, who are you going to trust? Dode? Or a theologian, a rabbi, a priest, a pastor?
Well, the pastor has a degree, so he must know better.
Well, he must know.
Dode was just a simple shepherd. What does he know?
He didn't get a doctorate.
Well, I think he knows a shepherd when he sees one, because Yahweh says, calls himself by Father, which is the head of the house, or the one, also the symbol of the Aleph by the Bet, who stands in front of the house to protect it and watch over it. Or he uses El, which is a shepherd, which is an Aleph with a staff that leads and directs. So a shepherd king, or a shepherd in this particular case, I think you would recognize that. So how you would get lowered out of that is beside
you. Know,
if
you had a choice and you could have God refer to you by a title, would you want it to be scholar, doctor, priest, pastor, rabbi, or son?
Son.
I was about to say, I was just thinking, son. That's the title.
Yeah, I was going to say, your child, my child. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, you know what? But still, with another title on you other than son, wouldn't the highest calling be Masayach, anointed Messiah?
Well, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got Dode again, so I'm going to go with Dode.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dode's rock Indeed, Yahweh's foundation is the Temple Mount upon the ridge line of Zion, atop Moriah, and the heart of Jerusalem. Our salvation is predicated upon the enduring nature of what Yahweh did and what Dode wrote in this place. Without the words to explain the deeds, no one would be able to capitalize on the work of Yah. That's a very profound thought. Without the words to explain the deeds, no one would be able to capitalize on the work of Yah. Moving on to the next statement we're going to consider here, 1847. We have a responsibility to guide anyone who is receptive to learning how to live their lives in sync with Yahweh's will, even when we have to admonish those who are newly born into the covenant that they do not understand why God accomplishes his will through men like those. Until they have invested the time to diligently study Yah's word, they might not yet appreciate why we must be politically incorrect, anti-religious, and apolitical, disassociating ourselves from the societal customs and counterproductive conspiracies which are leading so many astray. Recent additions to the covenant family haven't yet grown to the extent that they fully comprehend why we can't and be neither just nor compassionate until we use our words, backed with evidence and reason, to expose and condemn the institutions and individuals who have promoted deceitful, destructive, and damning myths. Therefore, the timing and recognizing that Doe's role in our edification and salvation, that is just beginning to resonate with this audience. The Masiaki is asking a profoundly important question in this regard. And this is what he says. Why question the God who gave the response, who gave me the responsibility to seek retribution, holding the abusers accountable by speaking to the people in my orderly and straightforward manner? That's a pretty amazing statement for Doe to make. Why question the God who gave me the responsibility to seek retribution, holding the abusers accountable by speaking to the people in my orderly and straightforward manner? So many people think that, you know, Doe's always complaining. No, what he's doing is exposing and condemning. I gave him that responsibility. Why question the God who enabled me to survive safe and secure in the midst of those who are opposed to me and hostile towards me? Moreover, you lifted me up on high, and you exalted me over those who rose up and stood against me, and away from the malicious, false witness, conveying man's destructive and violent nature, always defending me. 1848. There's two aspects of this. One is, God works through men. Mm-hmm. Extremely important concept. The prime edict for creation was to create a family. We have families because we want to enjoy experiencing life together. For God to act independently, he has to violate the very purpose for which he created the universe. So Yahweh chooses to interact with men and women through men. And that's so difficult for most people to accept, which is why, you know, they turned Jesus into a God. So that God's not working through men, that God is a man, I guess. and did his own thing. But that's just not the case. There's a reason that Yosha never refers to himself as the Son of God, but instead as the Son of Man. Yeah. God works through men. That's what he has always done. Do you think that Yahweh could have supplied the ark for Noah?
And still,
easily.
Do you think Yahweh could establish the relationship without using Abraham as the example? Without establishing it through Abraham?
It's a good choice.
Do you think Yahweh could have provided a prophetic account to his people without working through Shemuel? Do you think he could have conveyed the Torah without having Moshe write it? Do you think he could have freed his people from Egypt without having a 100-year-old broken-down shepherd?
Sure, it probably would have been easier for him. And as much fun.
Yeah. Would have broken. He would have. The answer is no, he couldn't have. Could Yahweh have freed his people from Mitzrayim, Egypt, without the 100-year-old broken-down shepherd? The reluctant 100-year-old broken-down shepherd. Or 80-year-old.
Yeah, it was obvious choice.
The answer is no. He couldn't. The reason he couldn't is he would violate the very purpose for which he created the universe, conceived life, and made these promises to Abraham.
I get your point.
So, technically, is he powerful enough? Oh, certainly. He obliterated the Egyptians and told his people, walk over that way. But if he did that, then he denies the entire purpose for which he created the universe in which the covenant exists. He wants to work with us, not lord over us. And so really the answer is no, he couldn't. And Dode is an essential part of Yahweh's communication with humankind. Now the second part of this is hinted at here, well, it's pretty direct. But oh my goodness, it just comes through over and over again in Mizmor 8 and 9. Without holding those who have misled and abused people generally, and Israel specifically, accountable, there can be no justice. Victims deserve to know that those who have deliberately harmed them will be punished for what they have done. Dode will not only be charged with the responsibility of pulverizing them and then sweeping the muck away, he as king will hold these same individuals accountable. It will be his job to console their victims, speaking to them such that they have justice and closure. You know, as I was just, the last passage that I translated this afternoon reads as follows. Indeed, he accounts for blood and is mindful of them. He will not overlook or forget the cry of distress and the screams of pain of the miserably afflicted. God's not going to look the other way. He is not coming back all happy and glad. And all of those people, you know, it's hard to ignore the Holocaust because it was just such a horrid event. But keep in mind what the Assyrians did to the children of Israel and how stunningly brutal they were. You know, they would take the skin off a victim while they were alive and screaming. They loved human sacrifice. They were savages. No. It's not just the Germans who tormented Jews. They were rounded up and incarcerated and demeaned and abused by the Roman Catholic Church for 1,000 years before the Germans conceived their concentration camps. They were abused by the French. And they were abused by the Ukrainians. They were abused by the Poles. It was universal throughout Europe. They were even abused in the United States when the first boatload tried to escape and came to the United States. They were turned away. Like everybody but one person on that ship subsequently died in the concentration camp. God's going to hold those people accountable. Every pope, every religious leader, every political leader is going to be held accountable. And those are going to take a role in it. For this reason, I want to thank you. Yahweh says, or Dod says to Yahweh, among the Gentiles, Yahweh, I will choose to sing to your name. So that's really fascinating. Okay, mm-hmm. So what is Dod thanking Yahweh for? For lifting him up and exalting him? Okay. For taking action so that he would rise up and take a stand such that those who rose up to take a stand against him were thwarted. Okay. That he defended him against malicious false witnesses. Yeah, that sounds good too. But is he also thanking Yahweh for the role that he will play?
Mm-hmm.
And holding the abusers accountable?
Mm-hmm.
In the context, I think so. It's been the hardest thing for me in the last year to really come to understand is why Yahweh, and now through Dod, is going to deliberately, purposefully hold those who have abused others, and particularly his people, accountable, and such that the victims will be comforted, which means they're going to be able to watch it. And the more I read about what the Roman Catholic Church has done, how pervasive anti-Semitism was throughout Europe prior to the Nazis, and how prevalent it is again, how grotesque conspiracy has become, how grotesque politics has become. It's appropriate. It's necessary. God can't be just and not do it. So should we be thanking God that he's going to hold the perpetrators accountable? I think so.
Absolutely. Yep. Don't you want him to? Of course you do.
Yeah, I do. And I want the people that were defenseless to push away the abusers. I want them consoled. Even if it's just to know that eventually those that harmed them so viciously were held accountable, that's enough. So anyway, Dod says, among the Gentiles, among the Goyim, people of different ethnicities, Yahweh, I will choose to sing to your name. So when we share Yahweh's name with Goyim and Yisrael alike, we're doing exactly what Dod would have us do.
Yeah, good stuff.
We're choosing to sing to Yahweh's name. The reason that Yahweh anointed Dod, the reason that he chose him as king, shepherd, and Messiah, and will do so again, is that God's Son appreciated having the opportunity to be about the Father's business. Even when the job wasn't one that most of us would relish. Doug realized that doing his father's will was always rewarding, beneficial. Doug's songs will be heard the world over, as his jurisdiction will extend well past the borders of Israel. Through it all, one name, throughout all of this, one name is going to reign supreme. It's Yahweh. It says, he enables tremendous growth while promoting the importance of freedom and salvation for and then through his king. And he engages, demonstrating enduring mercy, unfailing kindness, and steadfast devotion on behalf of and by way of his anointed Messiah. Through Dod and his offspring forever and ever. Well, before we get to his anointed Messiah, and then through Dod, which is what follows it, there is something that I think we've come to appreciate the more we have examined and considered the covenant and its benefits, is that there is something vastly more enjoyable, rewarding, liberating, invigorating, uplifting, empowering, enriching than salvation. And that's growth. And it's growth which enables us to become more like God, so that we can have even better communication. It's growth that enables us to go from three-dimensional to seven. It's growth that makes us alive. It's growth that makes eternity worthwhile. It's growth that makes Yahweh infinite. Without growth, Yahweh is not infinite. Which now explains why he created humankind. We grow through relationships. So he enables tremendous growth while promoting the importance of freedom and salvation. And not many folks realize that the Hebrew word for salvation, and this is Yeshua, is indistinguishable from the Hebrew word from freedom. That Yasha, which is this is the root of Yeshua, means to liberate, to free, and to deliver. So salvation is actually the byproduct. If you are free, you're saved. If you are delivered, you're saved. If you are liberated, you're saved. So it's the liberation and the freedom and the deliverance that yields salvation. Now, so why would I make such a big point about that? Because liberation and freedom are the essence of an environment where you're operating under free will. When you're free to express your will, when you're free to choose your own course, then you're indeed liberated. So free will and freedom go hand in hand. But in addition to that, it underscores how the Torah is guidance and teaching and instruction and direction, not laws.
That law, yeah.
Those who are under laws are not free. Those who are under guidance can be free. But it is, you know, when Yahweh took the children of Israel from Mitzrayim and into the promised land, he liberated them. He freed them. He delivered them. which is the means, their means of salvation. That's why the story is told that way. What did he say that they, he didn't say they were saved from. They were delivered from the antithesis of freedom, slavery and bondage. Men enslave. And men don't just enslave and put into bondage and control other men through the institution of slavery. They do it through religion and politics, through legal systems. And Americans think they're free. Well, I'll tell you what. There's a million things you can't do in America. You are not free. Your freedoms are very tightly controlled. But you know what freedom is? And freedom is a, that's why I've preceded it here. He enables tremendous growth while promoting the importance of freedom and salvation. Liberation and deliverance. That's an essential aspect of the covenant familial relationship we have with Yahweh. The ability to choose to be with him, to choose to ignore him, to choose to reject him. And he talks about the importance of freedom and salvation, deliverance, for and then through his king, Malekhu. Now, that's amazing in itself, in that it's his king. Can you imagine being Yahweh's king? I mean, just the thought of it. But that's how it reads. His king. Now, that doesn't mean that Yahweh is under Dod. No, but it means that Yahweh... Yeah, absolutely. And when Yahweh returns, he's coming back with Dod, and it's Dod's kingdom. And if it's Dod's kingdom, Dod's king. Mm-hmm. Even during the millennial Shabbat, when more of Yahweh is here than at any other time in history of past, present, and future, God's still going to interact with humankind through his chosen shepherd, branch, king, and Messiah. Even then. You know, even as Yahweh was accompanying the children of Israel through the wilderness. And by the way, that's a word that I have to apologize for. I have first translated Midbar is devoid of the word. It's Mazabar, which means it's the place where we should be inquiring about the who, the what, the where, the why, the when, and the how of the word. It means to ponder all of the important questions regarding the word. But even as they were being led, and with Yahweh leading them through the pillar of light and a cloud throughout this sojourn, this trip from Mitzrayim to the Promised Land, the person who spoke to them the most was Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, and he engages, this is Yahweh, demonstrating his enduring mercy, unfailing kindness, and steadfast devotion on behalf of, and by way of, his anointed Messiah. Now, if you're going to read his Messiah, and it's God's Messiah, I mean, 99.9% of the people on the planet are going to think, geez, Jesus. Of course, they don't have his name right. It's Yosef. But should you go there? Because this is, he's going to demonstrate enduring mercy and salvation, which, by the way, means that all Zod had to work with was the Torah, is that the Torah is the source of his unfailing kindness and enduring mercy, which means you don't need a New Testament based upon the gospel of grace. But beyond that, everyone's going to say, well, the Messiah is Jesus, Jesus Christ. But this is his anointed Messiah. Note. I mean, that's like saying that the plague of death is Shaul. And having somebody say, oh, surely he didn't mean Shaul. Because that's Paul. Well, here someone can say, well, surely he didn't mean Dode. It's got to be Yosha. But why does it say Dode is the Messiah?
Because his Dode?
Yeah. His anointed Messiah, Dode, and his offspring forever and ever. Now, through his offspring, so it would be appropriate to say that Solomon was anointed and chosen by Yah. Yosha was certainly anointed and chosen by Yah. But, you know, to a large degree, just as I think we are children of the covenant that Yah established with Abraham and Abraham's, which means merciful father, that we are the offspring of Abraham and that covenant through Yaakov. I think to a large degree we're sons of the Son. We've come to become covenant members because of what Yahweh conveyed through the Son. But by the way, this does say that that Dode is going to be his anointed Messiah for a few weeks, doesn't it? Isn't that a few weeks? No. For about a year and a half, I'm sorry. No, it doesn't say that either. Adolam.
For
Adolam would mean as a restoring witness forever. As an enduring and restoring witness forever throughout all time. Ad, which means forever, also means witness, and Olam simply means for all time. He didn't say, by the way, will be one of his anointed messiahs either, did he? And it is forever and ever. And we have mentioned. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just going to say, how do you refute that? I mean, Olam is Olam, and nobody argues Olam. Nobody argues Dode of who he is when he's written. And if he says he's his anointed Messiah,
right.
He's Dode, and it's forever. I mean,
Messiah.
How do you debate? How do you debate Messiah. Somebody like that? I mean,
right, and elect too is king.
Yeah, his king. I mean, at some point you just say, look, this is the deal. If you don't like the deal, walk away.
Yeah, if you don't like
this
the deal. That's why where Dode is saying, why are you questioning God?
Yes.
If God told you to do this, why are you questioning him? Why question the God who gave me this responsibility? You know, Dode's not saying, you know what, he is responsible. He said, God gave me this responsibility. Why would you question it? If he chose to do this, who are you to say, no, that's not good. I don't like that. I want to give it to somebody else. Who are we to question? God made this choice. I think that rather than questioning God's choice and trying to promote one that we like better, I think that that our entire mindset ought to be, what was it about this guy, his attitude, his attributes, what was it about this guy? What did he know? What did he do? What did he think that caused God to love himself? I think that's, and when I read what Dode wrote, when I read what Yahweh had to say, my overwhelming desire is to understand what it was about this guy, in spite of his flaws, that caused Yahweh to love him more than anyone else in human history.
He was
to
always
do more
right
with him and through him. Isn't that really, shouldn't that be our sole motivation, is to not only try to appreciate what it was about this individual so that perhaps we can try to incorporate some of what Dode had to say and
can you use it a little bit?
Yeah, into our own lives.
Sure.
You know, like Dode is very cantankerous at those who are opposed to what he represents and to his people. So maybe we ought to have that same degree of being unreceptive to and critical of those who are hostile to you. But that's half of it. The other half is, since God said this guy is right and this guy is his beloved son and he's inspiring him as a prophet, it's probably a really good idea that we learn from him and pay very close attention to what he has to say, and not just pay attention to it, accept it as true. So, let there be no doubt. Dode is Yahweh's Mashiach, anointed Messiah. Back then, right now, tomorrow, and forever. Now, I would tell you that there's very little of Dode that I envy. I wouldn't want to be Dode. There's some attributes that Dode has that I would like to have, but I wouldn't want Dode's responsibility. Way too much of a burden. I'm glad that he has all of this. I'm not, you know, I would not want to be Yahweh's king. I wouldn't want to be responsible for the retribution. You know, the things that, you know, I would be envious of, and we're probably all a bit envious of, is Dude was smart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be wonderful to have a mind that was capable of grasping all of this and understanding it all. And yet, you know, as I study it, I think there are things that we have come to appreciate that Dode may not have. You know, like Yahweh's overall timeline. There's no reason for Dode to know it. There is for us. There are aspects of what we've come to learn that wasn't germane to Dode's relationship with Yahweh. But his intellect, I'd love to have. I'd love to have his to be as articulate. That would be really cool. And I think it would be awesomely cool to be loved by God to that degree. But you know, if we are loved by God one millionth of as much as He loves Dode, that's still more than
okay with that.
I'm absolutely
no complaint.
At long last, returning to the 20th Mizmor, we took this departure because in the 20th Mizmor, there was statements about Dode's relationship with Yahweh and his role that just didn't seem, oh, there's no way that can be true. And so that's why we went to the 18th Mizmor, because it was essential to verify that indeed Tod Izyah was Messiah. And so here is where we had left off. It was a while ago, and this we left off with the Mizmor 27. And it says, there are those in chariots and weapons of war, as well as those in high horsepowered, swift, flying machines. But we remember and proclaim the name of Yahweh, our God. I was reading a statement from the one who has the great and unmatched wisdom by his own recollection. And he was bellyaching about impeachment because I don't think he thinks he can do anything wrong. And the notion of withholding aid in the, well, I guess it was $400 million range, in order to financially encourage the Ukraine to provide some dirt on Biden and his son. That the Trumpster doesn't think that they did anything wrong in doing that. I'm here to tell you that that would be criminal. You can't do that. But what he said is, so they want to impeach me from what? From establishing the greatest military and economy on earth, is what he said. Impeach me from what? Establishing the greatest military and economy on earth. You know, there are things that the Trumpster has done that are probably pretty decent. I think that his recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel was a good call. But he takes great credit for substantially building the U.S. military. Now, I don't know what he's actually done to, but he's certainly spending more money to build the U.S. military. And what this is saying, you know, lots of people, they rely on their chariots, their weapons of war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, America thinks that we are safe because our military is bigger than the rest of the world combined. You have all those aircraft carrier battle groups out there. We got the fastest and stealthiest and most deadly drones and ships and submarines and the deadliest and best trained, most elaborately equipped army. And they think that we are somehow respect what they have done to deliver our freedom. And God said, Israel said, there are those in chariots and weapons of war, as well as those in high horsepower, swift flying machines. Now, so here was a man that, you know, he knew war. He said, no. That's not what's important. That's not what we're reliant upon. He says, but we remember and proclaim the name of Yahweh our God. What Dode is saying is that the most powerful, protective, liberating force in the universe is not a nuclear bomb. It's not a battleship. It's not a military personnel carrier. It's Yahweh's name.
Where we started. His name?
Yeah. It's Yahweh's name. You want to be protected? Call on Yahweh's name. Remember Yahweh's name. Proclaim Yahweh's name. He is the source of liberation and protection that exceeds all of the armies that have ever marched. I have long said that if America had no military whatsoever, it would be freer and safer than having a military that is larger than the rest of the world's combined. to the best thing America could do for its own liberation is to dissolve the U.S. military. It's what Doe is saying. It's not in weapons of war, not in armies, but in the name of Yahweh that we remember and proclaim. Now, we've heard it hundreds of times, and the lie is always the same. We must show respect for those serving in the military, because without them, we'd have neither life nor liberty. And yet today, there is no correlation between this patriotic platitude and reality. Moreover, the military investment is counterproductive. The enormous cost of supporting a massive armed force bankrupts the nation and deprives everyone of their liberty, especially those who enlist. Doing so tends to cause nations to intervene in the affairs of others when they ought not, and it causes the unwary to trust man rather than God. It hasn't always been the case. Circa 1000 BCE, Israel existed in a crucible of fire. She was surrounded and constantly harassed by the Egyptians, Philistines, Amalekites, Moabites, and Assyrians. Not unlike today with the Egyptians, Syrians, Palestinians, Saudi Arabians, Turks, and Iranians. By the way, the Iranians said this week, their leader of their military said this week, that not only was it the Iranian goal to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, that they now have the weapons to make it a reality. Protecting his people is something that resonated with Doud, especially as a shepherd. But even he knew that it wasn't his arm or his sword, nor even his courage, which prevailed, but instead the God behind them. He wrote, "They collapse and fall, but we rise and stand upright, helping by becoming witnesses while sustaining one another." When I tell people that, you know, Yahweh is opposed to government, all governments, so I say, well, you know, people can't survive without government. You know, who's going to be in control? Yahweh.
Torah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know how. That
inspiration thing that I was talking about, what's the difference between being inspired by Yahweh through the set-apart spirit and or directly God speaking to you versus reading those words? The words represent Yahweh. They are Yahweh. They're the essence of who he is. When you read them, you're in touch with Yahweh. You're connected to him when you listen to them. And so, what he's saying here is that the enemies, they collapse and fall. I don't care how big the army was. The Babylonians had the baddest and meanest army on earth. What happened to them?
Gone.
The Assyrians had even a bigger and meaner army. What happened to them?
Same thing.
The Egyptians had a massive military. What happened to them?
Destroyed.
The Persians, gone.
Mm-hmm.
The Byzantines, gone. The Romans, gone. The Spartans, gone. All of them. All of those countries with their massive militaries, they're gone. They collapse and fall. But we, those who rely on the name of Yahweh, stand upright, helping by becoming witnesses while sustaining one another. You know, the more we come to know and trust Yah, the more likely it is that we will prevail. And in this regard, God's words are mightier than any sword. We have talked so much on this program and in these books on the idea with very, very, very few exceptions, we ought never resort to violence. We don't need to resort to violence. We should not resort to violence. We ought to use our words. And better than using our words are using Yahweh's words.
Yahweh's words. Yeah.
Present them boldly. Come to know who he is and what he said and convey Yahweh's word. That is how we ought to rebuke, to expose and condemn those who are harmful. That's how we ought to lift up and sustain those who are receptive. Use our words. You know, I think that if you are directly involved in the defense of Yisrael against religious and political foes that are aggressively trying to annihilate the country.
Good.
And you are attuned to Yahweh, doing specifically what he instructs. I understand the need to fight. In that regard, God was the fighter. I understand the need to lash out if you're trying to stop someone from harming a member of your family. But that's a pretty short list. Everything else we ought to deal with words. And if Yahweh's words fail, there is nothing that will prevail. Use our words. Use Yahweh's words. The more we know and trust Yah, the more likely it is we will prevail. God's words are mightier than any sword. Now, 3,000 years ago, Dode realized that the battle of his life, indeed the mother of all wars, was still to be waged. The world's going to besiege Israel as never before. And yet he was always ready for action, willing for his God to deliver him into the fray. Dode's a fighter, devoted to protecting his flock. It is one of the many things he shares in common with his father. Again, context is king. Dode is protecting Israel in concert with Yahweh's responsibility as a father to defend his children. Remember, I said one of the there are two and only two that I'm aware of reasons to resort to violence. One is to defend your children from attack, which Yahweh was doing with Israel. And the second is to defend the chosen people from annihilation, which Yahweh was doing through doubt. That's it. Yahweh, deliver the king. He wants to provide answers and respond to us in the day we call out our invitation and summons. Mizmor 29. Yahweh, deliver the king. He's on board with us. He understands his role. So he says, deliver me. No. I'll go into battle. I understand it's a big battle. I'll go into battle. No. Why would we be, any of us be reluctant to go and battle? And our battle is with words. But if we're conveying Yahweh's words, shouldn't we all say, Yahweh, deliver me? And in Dode's case, deliver the king. He says, Yahweh wants to provide answers. He wants to respond to us in the day we call out our invitation and summons. We proclaim and announce our decision to meet. That day, this day, is still on our horizon. It will occur in the waning moments of the sixth millennia of Yah. As the world surrounds Yisrael as a pack of rabid wolves, Dawud will wield the ultimate weapon, the Word of God. And that's the conclusion of the 20th Mizmor.
Just a question. I don't find anywhere in here where the context would be that Dawud didn't understand that this was a future event. Did you? I mean,
it's a future event. No, he
knows. I mean, in case anybody's wondering, he absolutely knows he's talking about the big event in the future.
Yeah. Dawud, last time I checked, was a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much aware of, future events.
Yeah. But he knew Yom Kippurim, this is the big day.
This is the big day. Dawud is a prophet. He's going to return. He's going to return on Yom Kippurim. It is the day of reconciliation. And he's going to fight through Dawud. That was something took me by surprise a bit. First, him returning with Dawud took me by surprise. Shouldn't have, though. And him by gaining recompense for all of the agony that man has caused his people. That took me by surprise.
Well, that was just wonderful.
But I guess it shouldn't either. You know, God's got to always works through people. So it's not going to change. And the person that he feels the most comfortable and useful in working through is Dawud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't suspect that Dawud's going to work alone. I think he's going to elicit help. So it's an extraordinary psalm. Now, this particular chapter of observations for a time, since it is focused as it is on Dawud's role, in leading us home. I did investigate some other statements that I thought were germane to our understanding. And Max, perhaps we should end with this one, which is in the 71st Mizmor. It begins, "To reveal the correct path to the benefits of the relationship, Asher, you, for a period of time, have caused us to see Ra'a Amanu, numerous and extensive Rab, troubles, Sha'ar, and perverse suffering. Wa Ra'a, upon your return, Shub, you will restore our lives, Chaya Anadu. And when you come back, you will raise me, causing me to actually ascend from the depths of the earth and in the midst of the idolatrous false testimony in the land." The first part of it is really instructive. And it's something that I've more and more come to appreciate. That without troubles, without suffering, I don't think we would have the proper perspective on or appreciate the benefits of the relationship or why Yahweh wants us to accept the five terms and conditions of the covenant. It's by having fractured families. It's by witnessing the false testimony of religious and political people that we appreciate why it's important to walk away from the family of man to join the family of God. So, trouble is an essential part of us appreciating, what the alternative is. Why what God is offering is so wonderful by comparison. So the second part of this, if you want to argue about Dode not being there as the second coming, I don't know where you're going to go with it, but because it says upon your return. So it means that Yahweh has been here before, and Yahweh himself is returning. He is not speaking to Yahusha. Upon your return, you will restore our lives. So Dode knows this is a future event. He knows Yahweh is going to return, and he knows when Yahweh returns, his life and those who have accepted the covenant will be restored. And when you come back, again, when you come back, Shub, you're going to raise me, causing me to actually ascend. Second coming.
Yeah.
Take me from a lower place to a higher one. Men tohum ha'eretz. From the depths of the earth and the midst of the idolatrous false testimony in the land. You know, for the essence of Dode, and it's not going to be a physical body, but the essence of Dode to be taken out of what now? This is Eretz, Ha'eretz, you know, the land of Yisrael. He'll be removed from the midst of idolatrous false testimony to an extreme degree. When Yahweh raises him up, such that he can ascend when Yahweh comes back. Now, it's your decision, everyone who is listening, because I'm not going to make it for you. And this is about discernment and perspective. The concluding statement either reads, when you return, you will raise me from the depths and the commotion of the earth, or when you come back, you will cause me to ascend in the midst of the idolatrous false testimony in the land. Of the two possibilities, the most surprising is the most accurate because the text reads, to home, depth and commotion. Not to who, irrational confusion based upon worthless, idolatrous false testimony, chaos and vanity. Although these things are related. Now, should the former be correct, and that is where the words lead, it would mean that Yahweh intends to resurrect Dode. It wouldn't be an actual body of his son just prior to his death, nor a body composed of the same cells, but instead one molded upon Dode in the prime of his life, when his charismatic beauty, his uncompromising strength, his melodious voice were legend. And should this be true, I encourage you to do your own investigation. Doing so would make sense in this particular circumstance because Dode is being asked to rule over the material realms, mortals, as their king. A diminished physical manifestation of this remarkable man would serve this purpose, especially since when gathered around Horeb, the children of Yisrael have already expressed their overwhelming desire to have Yahweh speak through a human voice rather than directly toward them. So while Yahweh was not bodily resurrected in the sense of being transformed from spiritual to physical, Dode may be one day soon. That may be even more controversial than referring to Dode as Yah's Masayak or announcing his second coming. But it is certainly a possibility. Now, I would say that perhaps this shouldn't be as shocking to our sensibilities regarding resurrection or salvation. It wasn't all that long ago that we translated and pondered the implications of the third Mizmor. And remember, it said as much. Yahweh, well, what is the extent of the increasing number of my adversaries and the unfavorable situation my enemies have managed to perpetrate, especially with the overtly hostile narrowing of my confines? The majority of people rise up, many of whom are established, honored, and powerful, standing fast against me. many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him or through him with God. Pause and consider this. You, Yahweh, are a shield all around me and my source of deliverance. You have provided the gift of protection for me, surrounding me, such that others may benefit by the same directions and path. You are my manifestation of power and attribution of status, everything I value and respect. The one raising my head from the beginning. I communicate audibly by calling out to you, Yahweh. And he answers me, providing testimony and evidence for me on account of his set-apart mountain. Please consider this as well. I relaxed and fell asleep. When I awake, I will be revived and productive, passing through the summer, roused, feeling alive, taking action and bearing fruit, because Yahweh sustained and supported me, steadfastly focusing on me, such that I could lean on him for whatever is necessary. I will not revere, respect, nor fear the great multitude of people from all around who have taken up positions on the perimeter and have set themselves up against me. I want you to choose to take a stand, Yahweh. Elect to assist me and be desirous of saving me, such that you enable me to be helpful in the same way, causing me to become an expression of your will while becoming ever more like you, a savior by God. For indeed, you will strike, verbally afflicting and then crippling, all of those who are adverse and opposed to me, against those demonstrating animosity and rancor towards me, smashing and shattering the jawbone and teeth of the unrighteous and unjust, the troubling and vexing. Approach and draw near, Yahweh, for the salvation of your family and for your benefit. Please, pause now and consider this. That's Ms. Marthree. Certainly suggests that Dode will be awakened. He'll be revived and come and be productive, passing through the summer, taking action, bearing fruit, because Yahweh will sustain and support him. So there we have it. Mm-hmm. The surprising and seldom considered role of the beloved Son of God, his anointed Messiah.
It would be quite amazing if you heard it for the first time. Of course, we've been going through this for a while now and prompting, you know, and discovering that this is what he's saying throughout several verses, so many verses. But it's, wow, what a shift, huh?
What a shift in perspective.
Indeed,
the Christian Jesus Christ to the ultimate Yahud.
Yeah.
To the beloved Son, to the actual Messiah, to the psalmist and king. So, yeah. You know, it's amazing too that the in that Shoah system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his name wasn't the only one that was butchered.
Oh, no, I had notes on the other ones, too. Yahusha, and on and on and on.
Yeah, I know.
I'll follow up on those as well, but now they butcher everything.
Yeah, Yahweh's name, the Shoah system wanted to deny the fact that there were vowels in Hebrew. So you had to deny the existence of five of the 22 letters. Yahweh's name is comprised of all vowels. Mm-hmm. And so the Shoah system was specifically designed to disguise and deceive relative to the pronunciation of Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
And so they changed the sounds of those letters, and in particular, the W in the middle of his name, and made it a B. As if Hebrew had a B. And no B in Hebrew. And What's the middle letter? I mean, DOD is only three letters long.
Yeah.
DWD.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no B in it. It can't be David.
No.
There's no I in it. Hebrew doesn't have an I. So, there's no I in it. There's no V in it. The A sound can come primarily from the LF, but can also come from the AIM. There's no LF, there's no AIM in it. So there's no LF, there's no A, there's no V, and there's no I. It's a vowel in the midst of two consonants, and the vowel is pronounced O. So it's done.
Mm-hmm. Something simple enough.
Yes. It means beloved. There is a real chance, too, that Yahud and Yahuda has Dod's name in the midst of it. Yah was beloved. Just like Yisrael, Yisrael has Sarah's name in the middle of it, to engage and to endure with God. So it's very possible that it's actually Dod's name that is in the midst of Yahuda. That the ultimate Yahud is Yahweh's beloved.
I'll work on that. See what I find. That'd be interesting.
I found Yahud to be one of the most challenging of all important names to translate, the name of that title. And my first indication in looking at it was that it meant to relate to Yah and be related to Yah. And the more I study it, the more I'm beginning to think that it's actually beloved of Yah, and that it incorporates Dod's name, just as Yisrael incorporates Sarah's name. Something to think about.
It'd be interesting to look, see what we can come up with.
Well, we are fortunate that JB was finally able to call in. Nothing I could do would get me in on the direct connect line or on the host call-in number. But it wasn't the cellular service here, wasn't the internet here, wasn't my phone here, because when I called in on the listener line, I was able to get in. But the problem was I got into nothing because the show doesn't begin until the host called them. And so I got in, I activated your mic and my mic and everything else, but there was still no sound, just music that plays in the background. So JB saved us by being able to call in. And so there were lots of issues.
Thank you, JB.
And you had lots of trouble, too. There the switchboard was just spinning for you. And
I couldn't even chat room at first.
And you didn't have the pen, so I had to the chat room, though, worked, and you were able to say you didn't have the pen, so I sent it to you.
Yep.
So I'm glad it all worked out in the end. I'm sorry we were 15 or 16 minutes late. Apologize for everybody. But I'm glad we stuck with it, and we're resourceful and found a way to make it work.
It was great fun.
Well, thank you.
Well, you guys have a great weekend and enjoy your Shabbat.
Yes.
Happy Shabbat.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Good night, y'all.